This week's parsha, Parsha's Emor, deals with the mitzvah of a kohen to be holy. And the kohanim have both a tremendous privilege of being the leaders as well as a tremendous responsibility. And one of the responsibilities is the beginning of the parsha, Emor el ha-kohanim, B'nei Aaron, ve'amarta aleihem le'nefesh le'yitama ba'ama. Say to the Kohanim, the children of Aaron, one cannot come in contact with the dead. The dead is known as the Avi Avos HaTumah, the granddaddy of them all regarding Tumah. So that even today, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, the biblical prohibition of Kohanim coming in contact with the dead still applies. However, the other tumas, as the Gemara in Bechoris points out on Daf Chavtes, that regarding the tumah of Nevela and Shratzim, different types of animals, crawling things, tumah Zav of Anida, that even that, today, the Kohanim are not Nizirim. So, let's spend a little time on exactly what is the prohibition of Latami Lakoin for a Kohen to become defiled. So actually is a famous story in Navi in Malachim Aleph chapter 17 verse 25. It's a famous story of Eliyahu Navi stayed over in the house of a widow in the town of Sarfas. And after he lived there for a while, the son of the widow, and some say in the Medrash it was Yonah, the famous Yonah, passed away. The child of the widow who Eliyahu was staying at died, and Eliyahu felt an obligation, a tremendous chil Hashem. If this widow is doing Eliyahu a favor, the man of God, and God lets the son die, Eliyahu felt an obligation to the child, and he took him up to his room. He warmed the body, and was mispallowed to Hashem. And the reason why he warmed up the body and breathed into him, because that's the way in general when Hashem does miracles, he tries to make it close to derech hateva, close to the natural process as possible. And therefore, that's why over here he lied on top of the body, he breathed life into it, etc. So Eliyahu was able to perform the miracle of Tchiyas HaMesim. That was a trade. In other words, he lost the ability to make rain. He gave God back the key to rain, and instead he got the key of resurrecting the dead. Because we see later on, after Hashem tells Eliyahu, rain will fall now in Eretz Yisrael. So what's the problem? What does it have to do with Parshas Emor? What does Eliyahu have to do with the prohibition of coming in contact with the dead? Because we have a tradition that Pinchas zu Eliyahu. Later on, we're going to learn about Pinchas, one of the great leaders of the Jewish people, one of the great Kanaim. And they say Pinchas never died. It's the same as Eliyahu. So we have a problem then. How could Eliyahu be permitted to defile himself for the child? We know Eliyahu is a Kohen, and we just learned in Parshas Emor, there's a biblical prohibition for a Kohen to come in contact with the dead. So how in the world was he able to go ahead and resurrect Yonah, the son of this widow? And in fact, this is a question bothering many Mefarshim. That's why when there's so many answers, it shows that that it was hard to find one satisfactory answer. So the commentators are bothered by this, and they point out, how could he do it? So the Radak, in Pasuk Yud Zayin over there in Malachim, he calls him a Yesh Misha Omer. The child never really died. It's just that he was very sick, and he looked like he maybe stopped breathing for a little bit. There was no noticeable life in him. People didn't realize. They thought he was dead, but he actually wasn't dead. Therefore, if he wasn't dead, So then there's no problem. Eliyahu is allowed to come in contact with live people. A Kohen can come in contact with a live person. And in fact, the Rambam, Amor and Nevuchim, Perek Membeis, Chelok Aleph, he points out, he quotes the Sheish Omrim, and he says, this is the opinion of the wise men of Spain, that this widow son never died, but he disagrees with it and says, it's not mashman that way from the Pesukim. It says, Ashelo Nosra Ba Neshama means he died. So if you read the Pasuk, it's mashman he died. So therefore, he doesn't, he rejects that explanation. In fact, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, it's mashma that he did die, because what does the Gemara say in Sanhedrin? Why did this event take place? Why? Because Hashem wanted the key of rain back. Therefore, he told Eliyahu, you take the key of Tchiyas HaMeis, and I will take the key of rain back. So if he didn't die, the son of the Almana, why would they have to make this trade? So therefore, it's mashma that since he just got the key of Tchiyas HaMeis, that the son was actually the widow's son, Yonah, actually did die and was resurrected. And therefore, that would be a problem. How did Eliyahu able to come in contact with the dead? In fact, the Gemara in Nazir and Daf Mem Gimel point out there's another problem with this answer. Besides the fact that it seems like he did die, but even if you assume that he did not die, there's an opinion in the Gemara in Nazir that a Kohen can't be metame for a ghostes. In other words, a ghostes is someone who's lying on his deathbed. It's a general issue whether a Kohen could come into a room of a ghostes, but that's for another reason, because we're concerned the ghostes might die. So then it'd be a problem. But there's an opinion in the Gemara that says Tumas Ghostes itself. That this being in the same room as a ghostes, even if he doesn't die, that's a Tuma Daraisa, that's biblically prohibited. We don't pass in that way, Pashas, but even if he didn't die, it's still a problem according to this opinion that he was a Metame. And there's a Gemara in Nida, and Daf Ayin Amin Beish, which points out that Rav Nachman traveled to Egypt, Alexandria, and he asked him many questions, I think 12. And he says three of them were foolish questions, at least to Rav Nachman, not necessarily to us. What was one of the foolish questions, which seems like a good one, is in Melachim Beis, but there's a very similar story to what happened here. Instead of Eliyahu, it was Elisha. And it was instead of the Ben HaSarfas, it was the Ben HaShunamis. So they asked Rav Nachman, Mahu Sheyitame. In other words, basically, it's a walking dead. This person died, and Eliyahu resurrected him. And now he's walking around. So he's a walking dead person. So the question was he Metame or not? So the question is, why didn't they ask about the first case? The Ben HaSarfas, that's mashma like the Radak, that maybe because he didn't actually die. They should have gave the example of Eliyahu, why not of Elisha? So it implies that maybe it's another riot to the Radak that he didn't die. But either way, that's the opinion of the Radak, you know, which is difficult, but all the answers will have some difficulty. But the answer to the Radak is, how was Eliyahu able to defile himself? Because he never died. Answer number two is Rabbeinu Bachai in Parshas Pinchas. He wants to take a different angle. He said the reason why Eliyahu was able to defile himself was because it was a Gentile, it was a non-Jew. And we know only a non-Jew isn't metame. Only a Jew is metame. If it was Yonah, how could you say it was a non-Jew? So maybe he converted later on. Maybe there was a Geirus. And the problem is, the Radvaz points out that in Sefer Yonah, he's called Yonah ben Amittai. I mean, it was Yichus after his father. He can't be a Geir. And Eliyahu, so that's one problem. And also another problem is, it's true there's a halacha that Kivrei Akum Eino Metamim, that the kever, the area of where non-Jew is in the Metamim, that's only not Metamim, but Oel in the same room. But But most shittas agree. There is one shita that says, not even mamaga, not even isn't matame. But we assume that ba'ohel, maybe it's not. That's a machlokas Rambam and Tosfos. But everyone else agrees that when it comes to touching or carrying it, you do become tame. So how did it help? That even if you assume this person was a non-Jew, the halacha is that's only being in the same room. But it's mashra from the psukim Elio actually lied on him, blew life into him. Unless you want to say he sent someone else, but that's the difficulty. The difficulty is, with this answer is that even if you assume he's a Gentile, he's still not permitted to touch a Gentile as well if you're a Kohen. The Chachmas Bitzalel in Gemara Nida, this takes the opposite approach. He says, this person was not a Gentile, he was Yoni, he was a Tzadik Gomar. And we have a principle, Tzadikim Eino Mitamim. We have a principle that righteous people don't become mitame. However, we paskin not that way. Again, all these issues we'll go into more detail later on, but that's the principle, Tzadikim Eino Mitamim. So far we have answer number one is, we have, like the Radak, he never died. So that's how Elio was able to defile himself. Answer number two, we have Rabbeinu Bachai, the child was a Gentile, and a Gentile isn't Metame. Answer number three, we have that Yoni was a Tzadik Gomer, and Tzadikim ain't a Metamim. And number four is the famous answer of Tosfos and Baba Metzia. Kuf Yidal and Amabez, that Tosfos writes, you know how Eliyahu was able to defile himself? Because Baruch Lo Sheyachyehu, he was positive he was going to be able to resurrect him, and therefore it's Pikuach Nefesh.
Joseph, please come to the nursing station.
So it's Pikuach Nefesh, and it's true, a Kohen cannot defile himself. And he violates a biblical prohibition if you come in contact with the dead. But like everything else in life, save the big three, idol worship, murder, and adultery, one is allowed to violate a biblical law to save someone's life. So true, Eliyahu was a Kohen, and true, he did defile himself, but b'makom pikuach nefesh, but in a place of human life, he was permitted to do it. Which begs, it seems like a great answer. Which begs the question, then, why didn't everyone else give this answer? Why didn't everyone else say Pikuach Nefesh? That also we'll have to come back to. There's a famous tshuva of Rav Moshe. I'll just say it very briefly, and then we'll go into more detail on this topic on another class. That he just points out, because Tosfos says a big chiddush is Pikuach Nefesh. Who says it's Pikuach Nefesh here? Rav Moshe writes, Mishahutaz Rosho, someone who has the head cut off. So that person has a din of a dead person, the din meis mamish. He's considered dead. And let's say you could find a possibility where doctors could get together and sew the head back on and a person could live. There is no obligation for one to be able to do that. Even if you can do it, there's no obligation to do it. Because, as Rav Moshe puts quite bluntly, there's no mitzvah of tchiyas hameisim. There's a mitzvah of saving someone's life. But there's no mitzvah of tchiyas hameisim. Only l'rapei cholim chayv Torah. Af l'chal es ha-shabbos. To machal ha-shabbos even to save a life. However, you can't call a pikuach nefesh to save a dead person. And Tosfos does use the language of pikuach nefesh. So how does Rav Moshe explain? So Rav Moshe says, it's not pikuach nefesh for Yona, but for Yona's mother. The pikuach nefesh for the mommy. She was mitzvah ma'od. She did a tremendous mitzvah. Her child died and she had a tremendous star. So a psychological star. So, I mean, it's okay to say a pshat like this. It's difficult to say a pshat in Tosfos. So obviously other Rishonim disagree and say there is no mitzvah. This isn't considered pikuach nefesh. That we'll have to go back to. But basically we have four answers about why Eliyahu Navi was able to defile himself. Either number one, because, as the Radak says, the child never died, he was alive. Secondly, he was a Gentile, and Gentiles aren't Metame. So you could come in contact with a dead Gentile, at least in the same room. And the third answer is, this person was tzaddik, the opposite extreme, and righteous people don't become defiled. And the fourth answer is, like Tosfos, it's pikuach nefesh. To say it's true, he was dead and he violated the prohibition, but you're allowed to violate the prohibition to save someone's life. So that's the question of Eliyahu HaNavi. However, and we're going to see a lot of very important principles come out of that. We'll go into more detail later. But just some basic laws of Tumas Kohanim that everyone, for sure if you're a Kohen, you should know it, but anyone should know. There are a couple of basic rules. In Yerideya, the problem why no one learned it is because the printer, he put the laws of Tumas Kohanim under the heading of Hilchas Avelus. Laws of mourning when someone loses a loved one. So some people have a tradition, a minhag, not to study laws of Avelus unless you have to. You're not supposed to study them before. So therefore, Tumas Mesim were lost. People never studied them. But if you look in Yerideya Siman Shin Tzadi tests, you'll find all these basic laws. In the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you'll find them. Check them out there. So here are just some basic rules to try to keep it nice and simple. A Kohen can't be in the same room as a mace. You know, a Kohen can't come in contact with the dead, and he can't even be in the same room as the dead. What about a different room? For our purposes right now, we're talking about a Jewish mace. We're not going to get a separate share in terms of the differences between a dead Jew and a dead Gentile. So right now, we're talking about a dead Jew. So, and we'll assume it's equal at the moment. Kohen can't be in contact with the dead, and definitely, and it also can't be in the same room as the dead. What about in the same building but a different room? Is there a problem? So, there's halacha that tuma, this defilement, travels either through an open window or an open door or even any open space that's 3x3, a tefach, a fist size. Tuma can travel. However, if you close, if the doors are closed and there's no openings, there's no problem of a Kohen being in the same building. So it starts with fundamentally a Kohen can't be in the same room. He can be in the same building as long as there's no open spot between where the dead person is. If you're up on another floor or in a different room and there's no open area, letting the tumah spread in, so then you're fine. A Kohen, you could stay in that. If you're a Kohen and someone dies, you don't have to leave the building. The second halacha is, there are certain times where a tumah can travel even through a closed door. When is that? It's called the principle of sof tumah lotzeis, which means, let's say you have a dead person in a room, and they plan on taking him out through a certain door. So even though right now it's closed and it hasn't been taken out yet, but in halacha, we view this door as open. We view this door as being tameh. So therefore, it depends on the plan. Wherever you plan on taking the dead out, so let's say an apartment house, you have a mace in a different apartment and it's closed off, and you have a Kohen in a different room. So number one, you could stay there. Let's say, so if there's only one entrance and you know the Kohen's they're gonna be taking the dead out of the maze at the front door, so not only can you stay there, you must stay in the room. It's usher right now for a Kohen to walk out in the front door. It's in Sof Tumas Lotzeis that it's considered Tamei right now. It's just the opposite of our instinct. You think to run out the door, sometimes it's better just to stay put. However, if the mace is closed off in another room and there's another door which won't be used, then you got to go out that door. But so normally it only spreads if it's an open area. However, there's a lacha of sof tuma lotzeis, so if you know it's going to be traveling through there, so then it could even travel through a closed door. So that's the second halacha. And as the Radvaz pointed out, Eliyahu didn't defile to the child, he was just near the child. In other words, you could say he found a place in a different room, so it would be no problem, which is difficult to say in the story, of course. Or there's a famous tshuva Rav Moshe has regarding hospitals. In Chelak Gimel Siman Kuf Mem Aleph, he says a kohen should only go in for a tzara gadol, close relatives. Most hospitals, anyway, don't usually carry the mace out of the front doors while other people are checking in. It's not really proper etiquette. I don't think it'll put a good feeling for those people entering. So anyway, usually most have morgues down in the basement. So truth be told, many hospitals really aren't a problem. But Rav Moshe writes, obviously, unless you know the specific hospital, at least in Chutz Laaretz, it's less of a problem. Because we're probably, especially in Hamilton, we're probably dealing with non-Jews, which is less of an issue. But the Mishnah says in Olos, in Perek Gimel, we need an opening of a tefach for two-minute travel. So therefore, the issue is, if the opening is, let's say there's an opening in a room for air conditioning, so then it can travel. So therefore, most hospitals have central air, so therefore the vents run through across the same floor, maybe it's even to a different floor, then it can pose a problem of too much space. So what you would have to do is, if you have a vent, you'd have to take, if you're a kohen, you're stuck in, you have to take a netting, take a plastic bag, plastic is a metame, you take a netting above the vent and it would restrict the tuma. In Israel, there's one hospital that has a special wing for Kohanim. So why either? Because they're one issue is they don't let Mason into that area. There's no critical care. No dead people are allowed in. Well, no one who's close to dead. And they obviously keep their room separate. But the problem is, let's say someone died in another part of the, another on the same floor in a different part of the hospital. So what they have is a double door with an electronic lock. And it's automatically, once one section opens, the other one automatically closes. Therefore, you can never have both doors open at the same time, and that prevents the tumor from leaving. So we have three basic rules. Very simple. Number one, tuma travels through an opening, through an open door, window, etc. And number two, sometimes it even travels through a closed door. So if tuma lattes, the place where you're going to be carrying the dead out, that right now that's considered tummy, a kohen can't go there. And not only that, but if you have a hole just for an air vent, that's also a problem. You'd have to cover up the air vent as if it was a plastic garbage bag or whatever. And there's one other halacha of an overhang on homes. Many homes on the side of the houses have an overhang. Tuma travels to any board which is a tefach high, which is the size of a fist, and a kohen can't stand under that overhang. So let's say, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes, let's say we have a row of homes attached, and you have an overhang sticking out. If there's a mace in one home, a kohen can't step out of his home. If a kohen is in his house, he's okay. But so if Tuma Latzes is going to pass over that overhang on that whole strip of houses, so Cohen won't be able to leave his house or even open his window. And as many times it's best, against our instincts, you shouldn't be running out. The Cohen should stay in the place until after they take the dead body out. So, that was the issue. Those are the four basic laws they have. And then there's an interesting discussion about Rabbeinu Bachai. He says the Bnei HaSarfas was a guy, so Eliyahu wasn't Metame. That's how Rabbeinu Bachai learned. Is that true? As we'll go into that, a guy isn't Metame. So can a Kohen go to a non-Jewish cemetery? So actually, it's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. And Daf Kuf Yudalei, with the story with Eliyahu Hanavi, where we'll continue next time. So just to summarize, we have the issues with Eliyahu Hanavi, about if he, we have a tradition, he was a Kohen. How was he able to come in contact with the dead and resurrect them? We gave different answers, and we gave some basic halachas about the basic halachas a Kohen or non-Kohen should know in terms of ever where a Kohen gets stuck in a house or an apartment with other Mason. As we learned, you don't always just follow your instincts and run out, but sometimes you have to know it's better to stay inside. We'll have to continue next time on Kohanim 2. We're going to go into more detail about the issues of righteous people not becoming metame, what's the story with Gentiles being metame, and then other interesting questions also regarding a pregnant woman. What's the story with a pregnant woman who's a wife of a Kohen? Could she go into a cemetery because perhaps the son, perhaps she's carrying a son? And then maybe we'll go into some of the hashkafa, some of the philosophy of Tumas Kohanim. Why is it that a Kohen has to stay away from a cemetery, from a place of the dead, which is the Avi Avos HaTumah?